Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus. Welcome, a warm welcome to all our listeners today. And I'm Anne-Marie Khoury, I'm your presenter. And I have online Richard Barter with me, who often presents the program once a month on transport issues. And welcome, Richard.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Good. And it's great that I get the chance to interview you rather than you introducing yourself and talking about your own experiences. It's good that I'm able to help you unpack all the goodies that you've come back from right. Europe with. And so that's going to be an exciting program. And you're the manager of Share the Road campaign. You're a transport consultant who investigates and advises various government and council agencies about what they need to be doing to be future ready for the growth and development and infrastructure that's needed and for the people skills that are needed to make the public transport system work. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to find out some of the things that you've learnt from your trip to Europe today. And I guess when I talk to people, road congestion is their number one bugbear about Auckland, and it's obviously the elephant in the room to some extent in any conversation about transport and or public transport. But we've seen in the papers positive comments about the Waterview Tunnel reducing some of the congestion at the moment. But then there's always the worry, well, what happens when the kids go back to school next week? Will it actually be that marvellous? So we've got to consider also that in Auckland, our geography works against us because it's a narrow isthmus. We have centrally located jobs in the CBD, so we have large numbers of people moving into the centre of the city, and we have that elongated development pattern of lots of new housing north and south of the city, and these narrow road corridors, the arterial roads are just not very wide. And so with the likes of Dominion Road, that has the most buses on it of any road in New Zealand, it's just perpetually got moving vehicles on it and not enough room to really fit the developments of cycle lanes and or light rail. So it's a challenge dealing with transport in Auckland, whoever you are, wherever you are in the system, seeking new ways to stretch to the future with more people arriving, 70-odd thousand extra people each year and 800 new cars on the road each week being licensed. So that's a big challenge for any city. Now, having said all that, I'm just interested to know whether we can't probably grapple with all of this material today in terms of what you've learnt from Europe, but we will perhaps come back and revisit some in the future. But right now I think it's time for a music break to just chill out for a bit. Music from the Finn Brothers, one of my Crowded House albums. And I can't share the title with you because the cover has been lost in my recent house move, but the music's still good. But it's very appropriate because it's about stormy winter weather. It's a moody piece, and I like the phrase, I have to imagine things to keep myself warm. It certainly has felt like that this week. Now, I'm also choosing it to be a reflection and honouring of one of the Grey Powers Auckland senior leaders who passed away last week. And he was a champion within South Auckland for older folk, John Ballantyne. He was a good bloke with a kind heart and was committed to improving life for older people. He drew my attention to the global advocacy movement to achieve a UN convention for the rights of older people. He was a great supporter of the age-friendly cities and communities movement here in Auckland, and he will be very sadly missed. and he will be very hard to replace. So let's listen to the Finn Brothers. For those who've just joined us here on Senior Focus, we're concentrating on lessons for future developments for transport in Auckland, especially public transport. And I have with me online Richard Barter. And welcome, Richard.
Hi.
Now, Richard's just returned from Europe. He's our guest today instead of being the presenter. And he's got the national perspective on improving things in the future in public transport. And so with your recent travels, I'm just wanting to get a handle on what was the purpose of your trip and what were you setting out to explore, Richard?
The reason for going was to attend a conference in Nijmegen in Holland on planning, public planning for walking and cycling. And that was a fantastic conference, and I can talk more about that, but I always make the most of going that far, and so I had stopovers on the way in a number of different cities where I met cycling people, cycle safety people, and also truck safety people in Sweden. So on the way, I stopped in Shanghai, Sweden, as I mentioned, in Copenhagen and London before getting to Holland. And then on the way home, I was able to stop over in Buenos Aires. And in every place, I did a lot of, got everywhere by bicycle or public transport to understand how they did things in those countries. And it was a great experience in every different city.
Wow, that's quite amazing. I guess that would have taken a bit of organising before you left.
Yes, I did have some help, and some of the people that I was with I have met before. For instance, I have visited Transport for London before. They are a bit like Auckland Transport in that they span across the various councils in London and coordinate big transport projects. And they're actually, I've always thought them to be quite a few years ahead of us in Auckland and in New Zealand. Mm. The problems that they've encountered, we're just beginning to encounter them. And many of the solutions that they've come up with, I think it's well worth us looking at them. And so we're hoping to get one of their key people out, who was a speaker at the conference I attended to New Zealand later in the year.
And, yes, which conference will that be?
It's the National Bike Expo in Christchurch in late October, 28th, 29th of October.
Right. It's always good to know when things are coming up on the calendar.
Yes.
I myself have been to a few biking conferences, but unfortunately I won't be free to get to that one. But it's always good to know what's coming up. Now, what do you think are the big picture changes that are transforming walking and cycling in Europe?
I think the single biggest shift is one of addressing the problem of mobility. So in a big city, people live, they work, they play, they do things. And in order for them to do things they want to do, they have to get to where they want to be. And traditionally in New Zealand, the way we get to where we want to be has been in a car. Mm. Now, that has worked well for many years, and in fact, in many parts of New Zealand, smaller centres, yesterday I was in Invercargill, they've got huge wide roads there, not many people, not much traffic. A car is a great way to do life in Invercargill. But you mentioned a minute ago, Auckland has 800 new cars technically coming on to our roads every week. The benefits we're currently enjoying from the new Waterview Tunnel, I believe, will soon diminish because there simply isn't enough room on the roads for all those cars. So the fundamental issue is we have to, through our road corridors, move people and freight in the most efficient way. And to do that, we have to provide choice. Now, for a lot of people, they have to have their car with their tradespeople, have their tools, materials. Families need to take their children. It's not always convenient. But for many others, in fact, almost half of our population, Anne-Marie, doesn't drive. Mm. They are too old, too young, not well, for whatever reason, they don't actually drive, and yet the whole of our infrastructure is geared up assuming that you do life by car.
Yes, that's a very interesting comment, because I know with the up-and-coming generation, I know my son, for example, in his mid-30s, he doesn't drive, and he says he's not going to drive.
That's right, and one of the things to come through from the conference was that these days young people want access to transport they don't necessarily want to own a car. So they want to be able to get from place to place, and that may be using Uber, which is the newfangled taxi service that you order an Uber car online on your phone. Or it may be a train, or it may be you can walk. There's a number of ways that people can choose to get around, but young people today don't want the problems of owning a car. We've got a lack of places to park.
Mm.
We've got the congestion you've talked about. We've got the problem of reliability. Or these days, once upon a time, we used to measure our commute by distance. That was the thing that defined how far people were prepared to live from where they worked. Then that changed to time. As we had motorways, distances became less of a problem, and people put a line in the sand in terms of how long they were prepared to commute for. But today, the issue is becoming more and more around the question of resilience. If something goes wrong, can I still get to work? Can I still get home to pick up my children from school if I needed to? And we've seen a number of times recently in Auckland where a relatively simple incident has absolutely shut down our roading network, whereas the trains keep running. The people who are able to walk or cycle are not held up at all, but unfortunately those in cars have been held up for hours.
Yes, in fact, in Auckland, a number one safety issue is, have you got food and water on board in your car in the event of emergency? Because the number of times in a year that this happens, that there's a complete shutdown, it can lead to people being stranded without adequate food or fluids. And it's particularly difficult, I think, if you're diabetic or you have any particular medication issues where you have to take medication at a set time and you have to take it with food. I mean, you're going to be in real dire straits if you haven't forethought. And so because I travel quite a lot by car at the moment, I'm needing to have that extra thinking going on and extra planning.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so, of course, we've got a different scenario compared to in Europe, where a lot of the cities were built many, many, many hundreds of years ago and were quite high density in terms of how they constructed apartment buildings. You know, your typical street in Paris has rows of apartment buildings that may be five or six stories high. And so that was the norm, and that meant a lot of people are living closer to one another, closer to the shops, closer to the schools and work, which means public transport works from right away. But last week I went to Whangarei on the bus, and the bus headed off from downtown, went over the Harbour Bridge without too much trouble, but then it avoided the gridlock altogether on the North Shore as it zoomed up the dedicated bus lane. So these sorts of, in terms of going forward, these are where the investments have to be made into this sort of infrastructure. The wonderful thing about the busway is that it would be very easy to turn that into a light rail setup where even more people could be carried by a single vehicle.
I'm conscious of quite a lot of background noise here, Richard. I'm just wondering, do you have renovations going on at your place?
We have our grandson for the day. Last day of school holidays. He's been playing his drums, but he's on to other things now, I think, Duplo.
Ah, so we can expect a quietening of the background
noise.
Right. So we're talking about light rail just at the moment, and I'm just I'm conscious that that's a conversation that I'm hearing more and more coming from the higher echelons of Auckland Council, from Mayor Gough and from Deputy Mayor Bill Cashmore and from other groups, including the Pokitapa local board advocating for it, and I think the Albert Eden board as well. So along Dominion Road, it's pretty congested anyway. How do you see light rail coming in along there, and what do you think the challenges are?
Well, the reality with a light rail vehicle that's perhaps a little over or twice the length of a bus can carry over 200 people. Now, it's all about getting, as I said earlier, more people and freight through our existing road corridors. We can't make our roads wider. We need to move more freight. We've got more people living in town, so we need more things in the supermarkets. And we've got more people that need to get around. Imagine that length of the light rail vehicle, 30 metres. An average bus would be 15 to 20 metres. A car, 5 metres. So in that space of 30 metres, we could, if you allow a gap between the cars, maybe we have 4 cars, so you could have 4 people in that 30 metres of road space. Whereas with the light rail vehicle, 210 people in the same area of road. It has to happen. It's not a case of, is there a problem? Yes, there'll be some changes. Perhaps there won't be parking along the side of the roads. We know Auckland Transport have done the surveys. There is more than enough parking within a few minutes' walk of all the shops down Dominion Road. These changes, people are going to adapt, but unless we want the city to grind to a stop, we have to look at other choices. Likewise, having the availability of walking and cycling options for people. There are many, many schools along Dominion Road. It's a flat road going straight into the city. It's a wonderful opportunity for people to be able to get into the city by bicycle. Unless we build that in at the beginning, and there have been plans in the past which have been called for that, it's going to be years and years and triple the cost to do it later. And the thing is, Anne-Marie, it will happen because it has to happen one day, and if we don't do it today, it's only going to cost us more in the future.
Wow, sounds like the blocks are out again. I agree. This is one of the things where it's easy for people to think, oh, well, it won't be in my lifetime. When I heard light rail 30 years, I thought, well, will I be here? But the urgency, if the city is to continue growing at the rate of 70,000 people a year, I know that's controversial and some people want to turn the tap down, but basically we've got more and more people coming in. We have the need for people to come in to fuel more development, and it doesn't seem with our own small population growth that we could sustain what modern development and a modern economy requires. We need more skilled people. So we're going to have these people coming. We need to get them in and out and around about. And we also need to cater for a rapidly growing, ageing population who won't be as mobile. So you're talking about the numbers that aren't mobile now, but those numbers are only going to increase because we're going to have so many more people over the age of 60 who will have limited mobility or no mobility in terms of capacity to drive themselves or
That's
be
right.
driven. So particularly I think the numbers in the next 20 years, we see a 200% increase in those people over the age of 80.
That's right.
And that is huge.
There's a wonderful planner who said we need to design our cities he called them 880 cities. So we need to design them to work from people from 8 years old to 80 years old. And only when we've done that will we be successful. Mm-hmm. At the moment, our cities benefit a very small percentage of our population, and the rest are reliant on others to get them around. And we have to find ways, creative ways, to enable those that are not as fit or as able to get easily from to the bus stop. I think a lot of these are being addressed abroad by feeder bus systems or little small vans that might take you to a small bus stop, where you get on a bus that might take you to the light rail. These things have to be looked at, because we can't just keep saying the car is the only way to get around. We've got to be accepting of other ways of doing it. Otherwise, people simply, I call it transport poverty. People are going to be locked out of society. They're not going to be able to do the things that they need to do or want to do to experience a reasonable quality of life, unless they can get to where they want to go.
Yeah, and that really brings up the whole issue of fairness. If things are not working for large groups in the population,
exactly.
Is it fair?
Exactly. There was a couple of sort of visions, which I think we'll probably nearly run out of time, but one was a very mechanistic vision of us being a cog in a machine, ruled by traffic lights, by machines, other cars, the inability to actually communicate and negotiate our way around. And the other vision was that of a fish in a shoal, or a bird in a flock, of being out, being able to engage with people, being able to move through our communities, where we can talk to people, we can enjoy them, we can have access to the things that we want to do when we want to do it. And it was certainly the second of those two visions that appealed to me, and it's what I brought back from Holland.
Wow. That's a great note to end on, have a vision of something positive, because we hear so much gripe and negativity about transport and about the organisation that's in charge of transport in Auckland. And some of it's not necessarily fair always, but people are frustrated, and that is the bottom line. We have to change that, because it's not good for people's mental health.
That's right.
So I'm really thrilled that you're a presenter on Senior Focus, that we have somebody with your skills and your particular connections coming in once a month to give us a window on that vision, and to help us understand more about what's upcoming. I had the opportunity to meet with the Deputy Mayor yesterday, and so he was very much focused on the deficit of the how many billion short we are to actually fund the transport changes that are coming up. But at the same time, I was left in no doubt that the commitment is very joined up between the government and the council, and we are going to get a lot of traction around light rail, and it's not necessarily going to be 30 years, it's going to come much earlier, and some of that will be around the funding mechanisms, that is within the power of government and council to manage, and the commitment is there to manage it. So I think we can only look forward to the excitement and the positive aspects that are coming.
That's right. Well done.
Good. So thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
Mm-hmm.